Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays. You're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like? Because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora. He's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/Count the Dings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome to the new episode of Showtime. I'm your host, Jason Madison, joined always by my co-hosts, Bethany Anderson, Anthony Mays. What's up, y'all?
What is happening? I'm lying in the fetal position on the floor of my apartment in my tidy whitey underwear. Hopefully you guys can break through the window and get me out of my funk here.
I'll leave your lunch outside.
Right. Make sure you got some Ruffles on the counter. You might get a little hungry there. So we got episode 2, guys. Winning time. Is that all there is?
That's what she said.
The KD meme right now. Hold up the little tiny fingers. Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, we did get some sex this episode. We got a lot.
Yeah, let's start with that.
Yeah.
Before this all started, I'm pretty sure I asked both of you, are we going to see Magic get down? Is that going to happen? That's what we all thought was going to happen. Obviously, Dr. Buss wakes up in the morning of the very first episode with a Playboy bunny, so we know that it's in play. But I, for one, was stunned to see Jerry West get down on this show before Magic Johnson.
A quick one-night stand, you know, angry style.
Sweaty.
Woo. Yeah.
Well, they, what did they say in Wedding Crashers? Grief is the greatest aphrodisiac. Because Jerry sniped her at a wake. Well, I was awake at a bar.
He pulled the Chaz. He went to a funeral.
Yeah. Jerry West just pulls up casually, randomly at somebody's funeral and is wallowing his sorrows about winning the 1972 title.
It's like 3 hours later.
Yeah.
Man's is unhappy.
Yeah.
But he was but able to fall into some...
He keeps winning. The winning streak didn't stop. So,
but you know, that's really funny though. Like, he just won a championship. It just shows how different it is these days. Because it's like, the guys, they go to the club after a win and it's just like, coochie just thrown at them left and right. And here he is at the bar. It's like, oh, you're not here, a part of this funeral? No, I just won the championship.
Yeah, good old Jerry, man.
So they answered your question from last episode, Jason.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did.
They showed us the full picture here with Jerry. And let's just get into Jerry a little bit. The internet is big, big mad about this portrayal of Jerry West. We've got exposés in The Athletic talking about how people were so disgusted by the interpretation of the Lakers that they couldn't be a part of it. Consultants walked away from the set. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to regurgitate a take because I thought of this during last week's mailbag and I got to bring it back. I love this Jerry West. This is exciting television. I have no issue with the character being changed to make it more dramatic and engaging. Do either of you wish that we had the real Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network? Or do you prefer Jesse Eisenberg's version?
Yeah, definitely prefer Jesse Eisenberg's over-the-top portrayal of Mark Zuckerberg being the genius asshole. But and it's the same with Jerry West. You know, I feel like it's much more entertaining to see Jerry West amped up, animated, crotchety, you know, all these things, than the mild-mannered character that he probably is. You know, for television watching, this is much better. So I get the discrepancy in athletes and, you know, people who are running this show. Like, hey, we have to make people, you know, excited.
And, I mean, how much more of Jerry West are we going to get in this season? Like, I feel like we're just going to get, like, a few episodes of, like, wild Jerry, and then he kind of fades into obscurity. Well,
yeah,
he'll be back. But this episode in particular, we get his flashback cold open.
Right.
We get the shot of the coffin in the house, which is a weird move to keep the coffin in the house for however long that was. But his dad is dead. He's got an abusive stepdad. He just finds his security blanket outside in the snow shooting buckets. And they did a interesting job building this character who is very rarely happy, especially after a championship. And my favorite shot of the episode is when he tells his wife that was the happiest he's ever been, and they cut to his face and he's just neutral. That's about it. But they had to get us to the point where he quits at the end of this episode, and I feel like I understand why. So I think they did their job. And you're right, B. He'll be around, but he won't be the star of the episode like he kind of has been the first two.
Right. He won't be the coach of the Lakers anymore. And that was, you know, kind of what this episode was all about. You know, Jerry West is also like one of the most revered Lakers, if not the most revered Lakers. So it's hard for any portrayal of him because people are talking about the portrayal of Magic. You know, like people are very sensitive about, you know, their sports figures, especially, you know, the Lakers fans. So I get it. I didn't think it would ever, nobody would love all the characters, you know, it just there's too many deep seated passions and, you know, emotions around it.
No, that is so true. I was just thinking, like, what if they, you know, did like a film about Kobe and we learned something about him that we don't like and we're just like, what the fuck? Like, you know, you're messing with people's stars and idols and people they've looked up to for so long. And it's like, how dare you portray him in a way that we've never seen before?
Exactly. But yeah, I thought the stepdad thing was an interesting cold open. They showed Jerry in West Virginia. 1951. His stepdad says some pretty wild stuff. He said, you know, there were some lines in this episode. He said, I wish those gooks would have killed you both, as he's going on his vicious tirade against Jerry's mom. I mean, Jesus, you know, I'm glad Jerry got out that house and was shooting the ball in the James Naismith hoop over his garage. You know? But yeah, you know, Jerry was kind of, again, the star of the show. I agree with you, B. He'll probably fade, you know, as the show moves on. And then we got basically more Dr. Buss, the other Jerry. He was fun this episode.
Yeah, he was really fun. I like how he just came in and crashed the, like, front office meeting, like, hey, what's good?
You know? With a girl.
With a lady, you know? With
a girl in tow.
She's just like, hi. He knows how to use women to his advantage. He knows... Mm-hmm. It may not work with everyone, how we, you know, got a chance to see, you know, when he had a sit down with Red, but he knows, like, hey, I can bring a chick, and this is kind of influence how people think, which head they think with.
For sure. They definitely weren't feeling him in that meeting, though. Jerry and the rest of them were like, yeah, why don't you come back later when we figure this all out and you don't have any input, you know? We don't need a Jerry Jones up in here. But
you know, this episode, it seems like it was Dr. Buss coming in and just flexing money and resources that he didn't really have.
But flexing, it's like, and look, drinking.
What do you want? I can make it happen. Just tell me what you need and I got it.
Yeah.
But do you really? That's an incredible amount of confidence to have that things will work out, unless they're writing from a lens that everything does work out in the end.
Right.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of that in this show.
Yeah.
Of the looking back from a knowing position in the future. But it is Jerry Buss is this interesting combination of flash and panache and showing off, and I love him chatting up everybody at the restaurant. You know, he knows the town and he is living large, but he is serious at the same time. So when he comes into this basketball meeting, they're operating purely on what they dealt with before, which is the old owner. And also, they probably think that this guy's kind of a joker, right? Because that's how he appears.
Yeah. Right.
But we all know, and they do a pretty good job in this episode of showing, he really wants this.
Yeah.
He's serious.
Yeah, and he's showing, like, kind of how his style is meant to be taken serious in a way, right? I think that's kind of the overarching thing about Jerry Buss that they're showing us, especially in this dynamic with Red Auerbach that we get to later in the episode. My joking, hanging out with the lady style is a winning style. You know, like, that's actually the most winning style if done right, you know, if everything in moderation, right? And that's kind of his ethos of, like, I can do it all. I'm having fun. I'm paying attention. I'm locked in with what you're doing, you know, like, and he does that as he, like you said, he walks through the restaurant, and later when they have the NBA owners meeting, and he's
same thing.
Yeah, he has that same swaggering interaction when he walks through the room with his intentional point of where he's going to get to, you know, at the end of it all.
Have you ever had a blowjob with champagne in the mouth?
Yes, was it.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn, I need to put that on my bucket list.
Yeah, he had some lines in that little walk up. He said, a little quick one, he said, yeah, Texas is bigger, but we have more fun.
That's
and I was
right.
like, yeah, I feel you.
I like our official introduction to David Stern, you know, young Dave.
Visionary.
A visionary, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's definitely your hindsight, B.
Oh, you of know? Course.
Yeah.
We didn't know that he was a visionary at the time. He's just a lawyer with a mustache.
Exactly.
No, for sure. And they portrayed him up like, ooh, that was wise. He knew what was going to happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he asked for Red Auerbach. He's like, where is he? And David Stern is like, follow the white smoke. Of course. He's over there. I like how the scene was kind of like how it was lit, and you just got the white cigar smoke everywhere, and everyone kind of standing around the boss. I thought that was really dope.
The Pope.
I mean, when it's like when you think of a owner. Mm-hmm. In my mind, I'm not sure about you guys, but he's what I think about. I don't think about like the trendy, like Mark Cuban, you know, type of guy. I think of a older man with a cigar, and he's running shit in a very in a militant way, very competitive. Like he doesn't want to talk anything else but winning.
Right. Yeah. He also has a very specific like coach look to me, and like an older coach, like a Lombardi or you know somebody like that. Which he was the coach and the owner, you know, of the Celtics.
Right.
And he had that whole kind of swagger about him, like, you know, I'm going to win. We've been winning. You guys are just there to lose to us, you know. And so he's also very much like the Goliath. And this is a whole David and Goliath dynamic that they're playing with, you know. And he's every swaggering bit of the Giant, you know. So, yeah, it's fun to see Michael Chiklis play that character, Red Auerbach. Yeah, I always think about that Family Guy clip. Scroats. They always made fun of Michael Chiklis, but he has a very distinct look, and it works for his character.
Great villain. Great antagonist to our fun-loving Jerry Buss. Just a guy from a hard scrabble town on the East Coast trying to play white basketball the right way, the white way.
That's right. Yeah.
And I love when he's got the other owners complaining to him. Street ball, it's scaring away the decent families.
Right.
They're not watching basketball. Decent families will cream their shorts for Larry Bird.
Well, yeah, they
did.
And they called him the Hick, which was the first nod to his nickname or one of his nicknames, the Hick from French Lick. So, yeah, I like the little Easter eggs that they have in the show for basketball heads as well. Like, that was one of them. But yeah, so then they get to the restaurant, Red and Jerry, and Jerry's trying to wine and dine them with the ladies and a nice steak dinner, some bourbon or some scotch, and like he does everybody else. And Red is sitting there puffing away like, I'm actually trying to take you for what you got. You know, you don't really want to play basketball. You just want to be out here. Have your kicks, you know, hang out with the ladies and whatever. And he's like, I'm out here to win championships. And then we see, you know, Jerry Buss, Dr. Buss, go into that winning mode, that gambling mode, that hustling mode, you know.
It's like, oh, you're not going to, you know, be nice back with me? Okay, now I'm going to play your game. Now I know what I need to do to rip your heart out.
Right.
You know, and, you know, with people... I think one of the owners is like, oh, yeah, I voted for you. And David Stern's like, he didn't vote for you. He needed all of these people to come through and just doubt him. Sometimes you need your haters to pull up and give you that good amount of hate so you can be like, oh, you guys think this is a game. You guys are really doubting that I could really turn this from this boring team that no one wants to watch into a whole spectacular show. And no one is seeing his vision, but now he has everything he needs to try to get what he wants done. Yeah.
Yeah. Magic already beat Bird. You know, that's the other thing is like, he's looking at it from a basketball standpoint as well. Like, I got the guy that beat your guy. So, you know, let's go head up basically, you know? So I think Jerry he knows the hand that he has and he's playing like that.
Yeah. And after that, we are finally introduced to, Donnell Rawlings' character, because we were like, who is he going to be playing? Of course, he's one of Magic's like family members. We had Donnell Rawlings as, I forgot whoever his character's name is. And then we got Earthquake, who was also making a cameo appearance. It's dope to see black comedians. Even though they may have a couple lines, it's still dope just to see their faces.
For sure. For sure. That was a dope scene when Magic is, they got a barbecue at the house.
Like a going away party.
Yeah. And Magic is getting money. You know what I'm saying? We now see Magic is in his bag, and he's also got some attention of the ladies. You know,
Magic's also in his bath because he gets his mom a tub.
Right. Yeah. You know what? Yeah. You know, and I'm gonna say this from a mom's perspective. What I see with that whole scene, I'm not sure if this was an actual thing that happened, but I can tell that Magic loves his mama because he noticed that one thing about her. He was like, you know what? When I get some money, I'm going to gift her with this particular thing because I think that this would make her so happy. And it's like he's going around trying his best just to please everyone and make everyone happy like he is. But, you know, his mom is just like, what the fuck is this shit? It's a waste of money. And like, of all things, this is what
now
you want to drag into my house?
Scuffs right. on the wall are from.
right.
I love how they referenced the Camay commercial. Yeah. That was one of my favorite parts of the episode because I remember Camay from the LL Cool J Around the World, a Runaway Girl song. So, yeah.
Okay, so I'm not sure. Is it? I've always heard of Calgon, like Calgon, mm-hmm. take me away. Was that like a reference or was Camay like a real thing?
Camay was a real thing.
Okay, dope.
Yeah.
I mean, so Magic loves his mama because he's just like, how could she not love this? And she's like, I fucking hate it. And he's just like, what do you say? You were supposed to be happy, and that broke my heart because. Oh my gosh. Like my son, I think he thinks about me when he like makes cards or he gets something from school. He wants to gift it to me because he remembers the little things that I like. And when someone remembers those little things, I think that's just really sweet. But some people, that's not their love language.
Right.
But I don't know. Yeah,
what do you think Magic's mom's love language is, B?
Going to school
dancing
and
in
church.
The rain? Dancing in the rain with Papa Magic, Papa Johnson, back right. in the day.
Yeah, back when she wasn't so much of a saint.
She really did fuck with the gift, though. You know, she was over there telling all her friends about it.
That was the best.
Yeah,
she gives him hell to his face. A couple minutes later, she's bragging about it to other people. Well done.
And he's just sitting there like, this woman here, she just gave me so much shit. Now she's just like, oh yeah, can you believe? That's relatable. Mm-hmm. It's like you try to impress your parents and they're just like, you can still do better. It's not good enough. Keep going. But you know, they're going around just telling everyone how great you are.
Yeah. And then Magic, we see the first sign of business magic. Well, his friends pull up on him with the tasty ice concept, and he says he wants to see a business plan.
This was a business plan. We just gave it to you.
He's like, yeah, I need a pitch deck, please.
Right. And then we have Cookie pull up with her man.
Mm. Ooh, Brian.
It's like we get to see how competitive he really is. Oh, poor Brian.
Felt bad for Brian.
Bad for Brian here, but he should have known better than to try to swoop in on Magic's ex.
Magic's old work. Like, don't be trying to pull up on my old work, son.
You know what shoes he's trying to fill there. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, it's a tough episode for Brian. I got to be real with you. He's just trying to manage a shoe store and organize church fish fries. You know, he's a good guy.
He seemed like a really sweet gentleman, and Magic just destroyed his whole manhood.
The way Magic pulls up to the park in his like brand new drop top Mercedes, and all the kids are like running, and he gets out with a big smile, tall and handsome, and like, oh, what's up? Let me play. And it's like, oh shit, here comes trouble. Poor Brian.
And it makes us kind of remember, too, at least me, like, that's how other people felt when they played Magic in basketball. Like, as nice as he is, and, like, they kind of talk about it later, like, public-facing, he's very smiley and all that, and he brings that energy. But, like, imagine you have to play against him, and you know you're going to lose. Like, most of the time, like, the Lakers were always, like, a 60-win team. Like, you know, Magic is winning, like, 85% of the games he ever played.
It's winning time, baby.
So he's like this super smiley guy, but on the court, he probably is talking shit to people. Like, motherfucker, I just came in here. You know what I'm saying? Took two chicks out your city, and I put up 25 and 14. Like, what? You know? So that's like the other side of Magic that, as Laker fans, we always love and we would see. But, you know, it's like to see it analyzed like that in a real-life situation was definitely funny and entertaining.
Yo, I think Quincy Isaiah is doing a great job as Magic. Yeah. I get it. I see it. I think he's doing a fantastic job. Because even with the way Magic speaks, like, he has a very, it's not an accent. It's just more like some words he just says differently. And yeah, they're just letting, you know, Quincy just, because I think he's actually from Michigan, yeah, the actor. So he got, okay, you know, he got that, he has that Michigan swag just like Magic does. And it really comes out in the way he speaks. He's just, I think this is who Quincy Isaiah actually is as well. Like, he's a very smiley, happy mm-hmm. person. Like, the interviews I've seen, he seems like either one, he's just probably enjoying life, but like to be on set and to just show up the way that he is, I'm just so happy to see this new actor taking off in front of our eyes right now. It's like he's the rookie, just like Magic.
Right, right. Mm. No, it's very dope. But then we see Magic getting busy in front of the church house.
In the church parking lot. Like, yo.
Yeah, it goes straight from him hassling Cookie at work, asking if Brian hit it yet.
Yeah.
And then smash cut to him smashing the cut in the car. And then when he gets out, he's like, oof, needed that.
He just took off.
Cindy doesn't say a word. Later on, they're hooking up again. She's like, oh, you know, I actually got into UCLA Medical School. Also, good for you, Cindy.
Yeah.
UCLA Medical School. That's
an
accomplishment. Mm-hmm. And Magic could not be more turned off. He thought this was a summertime thing. Yeah. He's about to be out. And then, you know, I got basketball, so I might be a little busy.
You know, it was so funny how Magic's parents put two and two together, like, immediately. As soon as they came back from, you know, getting it on in the car, the dad is kind of looking, the mom is looking. They have eye contact. Mm-hmm. They have a moment like, yeah. They didn't have to say a thing. It's like, yeah, he's hitting that.
They know their son, you know, if nothing else. Yeah, so we definitely got a lot of different sides of Magic in this episode. And then, you know, we get back to the Lakers, Claire.
Oh, yeah. She's starting to be, like, one of my serious favorites of the show.
Well, I just didn't like that she – I didn't like that she called the cops, but she kind of gets embarrassed.
Where the fuck are my books?
Yeah. And she kind of gets embarrassed about it, but goes off to kind of mask her embarrassment because basically Jeannie pulls up like, Frank took the books, so – why are the police here? Like, all you had to do was ask somebody. And, you know, she's like, girl, go give me some coffee. You know, and that's all she's got to.
Fuck out of my face. My go face. Refill this creamer.
Yeah.
Yo, she really has one job, is to make sure that Miss Rothman is, her shit is together. And to let someone come in and just take it right from out of her nose. It's like, bitch, what are you doing? But at the same time, Dr. Jerry Buss has a plan. He's doing this for a very particular reason. Those books are going to go missing whether Jeannie knew it or not. Mm-hmm. But I love that whole scene where she goes to his office and he immediately is like, oh, you're a gin girl, like fixes her a drink. Completely just like, okay, fuck the books. Let's talk what your new role is. And just throws all that shit out the window and gives her a new assignment, but which is a really dope assignment. But the way that he like approached it was like, what turns you on? And she's sitting there looking at him like, what the fuck are you talking about? But then she gets it like, oh, so you're about to let me really like run loose and do what I really want to do? Got it.
Yeah, that was dope. I think that was probably my favorite scene in the episode, or one of them for sure, because I liked just the camera movement, the blocking, like him kind of spinning the room with the getting the drink, turning it around on her expectations turning as she's, you know, getting this information from him. And I thought it was just done really well. Now we see Jerry's grand plan of let's turn the Forum into a venue that people want to have concerts and other events at. I love the shout out to First AME Church later in the episode, because the First AME Church did eventually end up using the Forum for many years. So that was dope. It was great to see that aspect of not just, hey, I'm running this team. You know, it's like, I have this big ass fucking venue, this building that I own now, and this is how I have to make money.
Have you guys visited the Forum before?
I've been in the Forum 100 times.
I've never been to the Forum.
Same. And so when they're talking about, right. And so I'm thinking about the acoustics and the issues they were talking about with the sound. Like,
yeah,
did it, what does that's it sound
a, yeah. like? Yeah. I mean, it's not, I don't understand how like acoustics work in particular, but it's not set up in a way that concerts can like, I don't know the audio, like, you know, right. whatever, but it just wasn't, whatever
it
wasn't
was built for that, right?
Yeah, it wasn't built for that. Thing. Yeah, the acts weren't coming there. And so even I went to see Prince there. I took my mom to see Prince there on Mother's Day. And it was dope. That was actually one of the greatest, shit. Like, yeah.
And like, Jason's mom was like, and now I see why these scuffs are up in my house.
Exactly.
Michael Jackson isn't here either.
God, Jason.
But he only like occupied like half the arena. You know what I'm saying? I guess they cut that back half off. And even then it kind of like was just staged a little weird. It wasn't like it is in the Staples Center where it's like kind of like 2/3 of the arena. And I don't know how they worked that out, but I guess it was an issue. But yeah, obviously he changed that, you know, and changed the perception of that. But even Jeannie was the one that was saying like, we just need to make it cool. Like, we don't have to change the acoustics. And that's kind of the point that I was saying with the Prince thing. Like, it wasn't a full, like, 20,000 people in there. It was probably, like, 8 or something, you know? So that's what they worked out, you know? Like, just make it a cool place for people in L.A. to want to perform, to come when they're here. And, you know, that'll solve your problem. You don't have to fill it up to be the Staples Center, the Rose Bowl.
I like what Dr. Buss was like. Look, I am the budget. You have access right. to me. I am the budget.
Yeah.
Sure. Totally. With the benefit of hindsight. This is all very sketchy behavior. Yeah.
Right.
Literally
exactly.
taking the books out in the middle of the night. Claire is all kinds of worried because she was at the 76ers that she said she was with, and they went bankrupt, and her feet came out from under her. So, and she said that she saw that it was headed that way but didn't say anything. So, she's been burned before. She's just trying to keep this on track. Luckily, we know it works out. But, man, that you know, maybe I'm watching too many, like, The Dropout and stuff like that. Got too much fraud on the brain. But those are some red flags that Jerry Buss is throwing up here.
Huge red right. flags. Yeah.
But he's a gambler. He's a hustler. And he's all in on this proposition.
And he's winking to us like, you know, I actually don't have the money for this, but I'll figure that out.
Do you identify as crypto curious? If you've thought about entering the world of cryptocurrency but felt a little overwhelmed, Coinbase makes learning to buy and sell simple. Cryptocurrency might feel like a secret exclusive club, but Coinbase believes that everyone, everywhere should be able to get in the door. Whether you've been trading for years or just getting started, Coinbase can help. Coinbase offers a trusted and easy-to-use platform to buy, sell, and spend cryptocurrency. They support the most popular digital currencies on the market and make them accessible to everyone. They offer portfolio management and protection, learning resources, and a mobile app so you can trade securely and monitor your crypto all in one place. Millions of people in over 100 countries trust Coinbase with their digital assets. Whether you're looking to diversify, just getting started, or searching for a better way to access crypto markets, start today with Coinbase. And for a limited time, new users can get $10 in free Bitcoin when you sign up today at coinbase.com/BOMM. Sign up at coinbase.com/BOMM for $10 in free Bitcoin. This offer is for a limited time only, so be sure to sign up today. That's coinbase.com/BOMM.
Which takes us to his mama's house.
Mama!
Oh, it was so great. I love seeing them two in a scene together.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was so perfect.
Yeah, that was awesome. It was a great scene. He's fixing his mom a drink.
Yeah. You know?
Trying to tell her that she should cool off since 1962.
Yeah. No, that whole scene was fun. She's the accountant, and they're going back and forth about his aspirations and what he wants to see for the family name, and, you know, and she's just like, you're just going to want to do something else after that, you know? But yeah, it that whole thing was just fun.
That was a scene where I was just like, man, they are really writing from a 2022 standpoint. Like,
yep.
Right. My God, like, oh, you know, we're going to be this. We're going to be so successful and our family name and our legacy.
He's throwing around dynasty that much, you know, yeah. as much as yeah. he talks about being a dynasty when he like it's the off season. He bought the team a month ago. Like, okay. So yeah. like, we get it. We know you become a dynasty, but slow yeah. down, bro.
It says, forget Louis B. Mayer.
His mom is like, why the Lakers? There's no lakes around here. Yeah. Which I'm sure people who don't know anything about the NBA mm-hmm. and how the Lakers ended up in LA, they're probably like, yeah, what's up with that?
Yeah, they did a great joke about that in basketball. I don't know if you guys have seen that. Mace, have you seen basketball?
Oh, yeah. But yeah. refresh the people's oh, okay. minds, Jason.
Well, yeah. The South Park creators create a fake game, whatever, and they talk about how the other games are falling apart, the other major sports leagues. And in that, they mention how teams with names move to different cities where the names don't associate at all. Like the Lakers moving from Minneapolis to LA where there are no lakes. The Jazz moving from New Orleans to Utah where there is no music.
That's always like, the one for me. That's the one. Yeah. There's yeah. nothing jazzy about Utah.
Yeah. I think there was like an Oilers thing in there, some other stuff, but yeah, that's the general idea. Mama Bus had some words for him on his big plans. She knows where the bodies are buried because she's the accountant.
Yeah.
Because she buried them.
She buried them. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. What a luxury for this show to just have Sally Field come in and do one scene, man. Unbelievable.
Wonderful. Yeah. Incredible. She's great. Is she the best mom of all time in film and television? Who's the best mom? Tyler Perry?
Angela Bassett.
Yeah. Loretta Devine is a good mom.
She is a good mom. Who is not a mom?
I love Patricia Clarkson.
Who's that? Everybody Loves Raymond?
She's in like Pieces of April. She's a great mom in that. She's in Easy A. Well, yeah, Easy A, she's the mom. And then also FWB, she's the mom. She's just great. She's a great actress. She's the kooky aunt in 6 Feet Under. So that's mom adjacent.
Oh, yeah, I recognize her. She's a good mom.
Let's get back to Jerry a little bit here. So Jerry, like I said, referenced earlier, you know, he's on the floor in his undies. Bill Sharman comes to see him, the GM. He says, do whatever the hell you want. Put Magic in the post, and that gets Jerry going. He's stoked on this now. And then he wants to talk to Kareem. He goes to see Kareem. Kareem is just silently meditating, overlooking Hollywood fantastically. And he's talking about how too many people are, you know, Kareem's got to deal with too many bodies in the post. He's essentially going to use Magic as a
elbow catcher
to clear room for Kareem, an elbow catcher, an elbow magnet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's his big plan. Kareem essentially says nothing. Right. And he moves on.
Well, I actually want to get into this scene and the tandem of scenes between him and Norm and him and Kareem. And there's a few kind of like racial undercurrents through Jerry's speech that the guys get hit with. And Jerry doesn't, I mean, the show depicts Jerry doesn't mean any malice by what he's saying. He's kind of just a white guy of his time. And that's, you know, how he's explaining things. Because the second scene ends with Kareem revealing that he's reading the book Nigger by Dick Gregory. Well, actually, the scene ends with my favorite part, which is with Jerry saying, As-salamu alaykum, and then Kareem responding with alaykum salam, which was perfect. But, you know, it starts with him going at Norm, saying, you know, who fucking wears jewelry on the basketball court? And, you know, all of this shit. And then,
yeah, that scene shot really well where he's praising him in the office and they cut to him essentially saying the same thing but antagonistically on the court.
Yeah.
And Norm is not buying it for a second. Yeah. You can see that all in Devon Nixon's eyes.
Yes. Yep.
And so part of it is he says, I would trade you for a fucking mule. That's another line that kind of has a little racial undercurrent to it. And the elbow thing that he says with Kareem kind of has that as well, because he's like, oh, I'm going to have somebody else like taking the elbows from you, blah, blah, blah. And it just seems weird, you know? And so that's kind of why like Kareem reveals that. And every time you see Kareem, the camera cuts to Kareem and he gets disturbed, it's on a line like that. And it kind of just shows that Jerry doesn't really get these guys, right? He's not connecting with them
at all.
In any way. Yeah. And he's trying to like rile himself up to get them going, and it's just not landing.
Yo, the book part, literally, I laughed out loud. When he showed that book,
list.
I hollered. Yeah, yeah. It's on my list.
List. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's great. That's great.
I'm getting to that one, yeah. Also, Norm's final line to him. Yeah, that's what we've been missing, Jerry. More control from you.
From you. Yeah.
That's what we want. So then Jerry kind of mournfully and thoughtfully glues his MVP trophy back together, his finals MVP trophy. And then he is inspired to bring his wife flowers. He thought they were calming, but it turns out they're funeral flowers. Little funeral callback.
That's right.
Yeah, spending exactly. A lot of time thinking about funerals, and she's not buying it for a second. You haven't talked to me in 3 days. I'm not dealing with happy Jerry, sad Jerry. Mm-hmm. He says he's the happiest he's ever been. We get that great cut, and then he's, oh, of course, except for when we got together, honey.
Yeah.
That was another great moment too. And all this leads to Jerry wanting to resign. So B, were you buying it? Did you feel like you were on the journey with him and it made sense?
I was a bit confused, but at the same time, I also took an edible. So it started to kick in when this part came up. So you hear, you know, you have Jerry bust into the office. He gives this incredible speech, super inspiring.
Dead Poets Society gets up on the desk. Oh, captain,
right.
My captain.
Yeah.
That's right. And everyone's like, okay, we're winners. That's right. And he had already told Jerry West, like, whatever you want, I got you. Just let me know what you need to be a winner. So when he was like, I'm handing in my resignation, it was kind of like, this is really weird. How did we get to this point? Was it the not really connecting with the players that he was trying to talk to? Or like, how did we get here?
It happened kind of fast. I will
it
say
did.
Yeah. I mean, in the timeline of the story, that is when it happened. So I guess they were trying to accurately depict that, you know, whatever the transaction was, Jerry left the team and they hired Pat Riley before the season started. So, you know, they're trying to narratively get there pretty quickly, because I think like us, they also want to get to Pat Riley being on the show. And Adrian
Brody.
Oh,
I can't wait, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that might be cause for some of the speed of the storyline, honestly.
Yeah.
But
also, I think they wanted to have it be a cliffhanger almost ending. They wanted to spring it on us there at the end and not really explain it. But I feel like the one thing that was shown to me was that Jerry West has roller coaster emotions, can change on a dime, and is not very happy and also pretty out of touch. The second part, he's probably like, he probably doesn't know how out of touch he is, but we see that.
Yeah.
I think it depicts definitely his out of touch aspect more than anything this episode. You know, like, he's not connecting with the team, and I think that probably hurt him the most in realizing that. Like,
I don't know. Something, this episode wasn't my favorite. I felt like we spent way too much time on Jerry, and we spent a lot of time on Magic before he decided to take off to LA. I really wish we could have gotten more Claire Rothman and more Jeannie Buss, but it is what it is. I see the story they were trying to tell there.
Right. I always want more John C. Reilly, so I would have loved to see
always.
More Red.
That's right.
Red and Jerry Buss going at it, because that was my favorite part, too, of the episode, was the Red and Jerry interactions were fun.
Yeah, I want to go back to that scene at Chasen's for a minute real quick, because I do love Jerry just trying to get that seat at the table, get the respect of the biggest winner in the sport. And Chiklis, so unfazed, could not be more uninterested in what Jerry is selling. Says milk the attention, milk it for the nookie reference. Shout out Limp Bizkit.
Limp Bizkit.
For the attention. Leave the dynasties to me. And then in a nice little connection, the other side of the coin from Jerry, right? We had the montage in last episode of Jerry losing over and over and over again. Who'd he lose to? Who's always smiling, smoking the cigar and all that footage? It's Red. And he says, I don't want to win. I need to. And it doesn't make me happy. It makes me a miserable fucking bastard. And so this connects to a term coined by Pat Riley, who we have yet to see, called the disease of more, which is the issues that a team faces after they win a championship, what it takes to keep the hunger and keep going for multiple championships to become a dynasty. And Red is such a winner, such a miserable bastard that it almost does nothing for him. It's all about just the next one, even as he gets that, the one in front of him. But he's also kind of like in this smug, comfortable space where he doesn't even think about the smaller fish. Like, he's only worried about himself, his team, and cream and shorts. So I like the contrast of the two, showing that the winner and the loser pretty unhappy in their own ways, and how kind of unfulfilling it all is when you're at the top.
And I think that may just be the theme of the entire episode, because we have Magic, who is just this winner, but he just can't seem to win the people's love and attention that he really is craving. His mom, Cookie, and then at the same time, you got, you know, everyone looking at Dr. Buss like, oh, you're just here just for, like, you're a real estate guy. You don't really take this seriously. And it's like, well, just because I'm out here having fun, I'm smiling and happy, and I got all the bitches and the drinks and whatever, it's like,
champagne blowjobs.
That's right. I'm going to show you that we can have fun and do this. We can win. We can also make it look good. We don't have to be miserable fucks like you.
Yeah. And obviously, they do end up winning and being happy and having that joy. And I feel like part of that is, you know, the mindset difference in winning, you know, and that's kind of what I got from it, knowing that they're both going to become known as, you know, the most legendary winning franchises in the NBA. It's the mindset difference between the kind of sunny LA perspective, multicultural even, you know, obviously that's a big thing between the Boston, very cold, white, like, you know, ideology that they carry, and, you know, they're embodying that in their versus battles that they do in the in the episode. So at the end, Red tries to do a mic drop on him and drops a cigar on the floor of the Lakers forum, and Jerry doesn't back down, and that's basically his whole position. It's like, I'm not gonna back down to you. I'm not gonna let you bully me. Yeah, I know you won, but just wait till you see what I'm about to do.
So out of everything this episode, what was you guys' favorite, like, moment, if you haven't discussed it already? I'll start. I loved it when Dr. Buss broke the fourth wall via the mirror while having a conversation with Red. I love that. Like, that was just so well done. Shout out to, what was that, Jonah Hill?
Yeah, Jonah Hill.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He directed this episode.
Yeah.
Jonah, who, of course, made his directorial debut with Mid-90s. A great little movie, if you haven't had a chance to see it, about a young skateboarder that's based in, like, 90s LA. It's really personal film for him, but it was really good. My favorite moment was the whole scene at Chasen's. But my favorite line, my favorite moment was Jerry talking to his wife and then them cutting to him thinking that he was the happiest in his life. That was my favorite moment right there.
Yeah. My favorite moment was when they were walking through the NBA owners meeting with David Stern, and just the banter, the fact that he had his Lakers cowboy belt on. I thought that was dope. I want to see if I can find that belt somewhere. And that line, the blowjob with the champagne in her mouth, was just, yeah. I mean, it was just like, I let out an audible, like, howl when I heard that.
And I'm just now noticing, like, it's coming back to me, that when they had that owner's meeting, they kind of they didn't show many other teams. They did have a Chicago Bulls, like, small little banner on the wall. But I guess that was kind of like, you know, foreshadowing, like, the dynasties in the room. Like, you got the Lakers, future dynasty. You got the Celtics, and then you also have the Chicago Bulls. So it's kind of like a little nod to how the NBA really turned up.
I also like that shot where you see Dr. Buss looking up at the one Lakers banner.
Right.
Knowing that there'll be so many more next to it.
That's right.
Also, they didn't put up the Minneapolis ones, I guess, or they don't have banners for the Minneapolis ones, whatever.
Yeah.
And underrated little filmmaking moment was the snow turning into confetti in that cold open.
Yeah,
that was a great little transition. I love that.
Yeah,
that was nice.
But I want to ask you both. So I think we're all in agreement this was a little bit of a filler episode, episode two. We're all ready for Pat to come in. We're all ready for
some showtime.
Actual Lakers basketball instead of Magic playing pickup. I
was
going to
ask you what you thought of that basketball
games.
Footage.
Yeah. I did spy with my little eye a dunk double on Magic when he dunked. That was not Quincy Isaiah. Keep your eyes peeled for the dunk doubles. That would be a dope job. Are you kidding me? You get to be a dunk double, winning time. You just come in and throw it down a couple times in a row, get paid.
That's right.
But it seems pretty clear that they are going to spend all of season one on the first Lakers season, which is, I guess, a little bit of a gamble considering that they want to tell the whole story of the whole 80s. But I just want to know how you feel about that. Jason, let's start with you.
I think it's good because they have to spend a lot of time introducing these characters, and there's a lot that happens in the first year of the Lakers. You know, like Jerry Buss owning the team, them winning the title, Magic wins Rookie of the Year, like all of this, like he changes the style of basketball, like the whole thing. These are all kind of very hyper aggressive like activities that happen in a small window. So then to, you know, it's like if they did this in four episodes, we would feel cheated. So I feel like it's good. But then I don't know how they're going to treat every single other season. And are we going to get 11, you know, seasons of this show? Like, I don't understand how that's going to game out over the long term. How are we going to get to that 1991 moment that we opened up on?
Right.
In the first episode.
We're definitely not getting back to that this year.
Yeah. No. So it's a great question you posed, Maze, because I don't know how they're going to end up dealing with the rest of the material after dedicating so much time to this on a, you know, year basis.
I'm with it. I'm all about making sure that the audience understands what's happening and not glazing over it too much. Like you said, there are still a lot of people we have not been introduced to yet. So hopefully it's not as much of a filler like we experienced with this, with episode two, but I'm ready for the heavy hitters to come on in and get more of a, hopefully we can get some insight, some behind the scenes, like we can learn something that we haven't been privy to with all the documentaries and interviews that we have out there. I'm excited to learn more. So they can take their time, but just not too slow.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we get to episode 4 or 5 and this is just a blip in the radar to get to that point. Once, you know, once things are happening, once we got actual NBA basketball, once we got more Larry Bird, more Pat Riley, Paul Westhead, all those characters waiting to make their appearance.
Yeah, like, what do you think, Maze, this, as far as the timeline of the show should be? Like, the... like, if this show were to have a series finale, how many seasons should it be? Like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of hit both points, which is, like, there's a lot in season one. There's a lot in the first season of the team together, and establishing all that is important. And then I wouldn't be stunned to see a season two be 3 years.
Right.
You know? There's more groundwork to be done here. And like B said, you know, this might be the last time Jerry West is a co-lead, essentially. I would say that the first three episodes have been pretty equally about Jerry Buss, Jerry West, and Magic. And I would expect Jerry West to kind of back up into the shadows a little bit. And, you know, I want to see a little more from Kareem.
Yeah.
Like, I think that he's been well used in these first two episodes, but he's also said about two lines of dialogue, and one of them was in Airplane. So I need more of that. And I'm just, I'm ready for Norm, Magic, and Kareem to all be together. I'm ready for Pat Riley. Let's go. Let's fire it up.
Yeah. I was going to ask you too, or I guess both of you guys, like, have you watched the post show?
I watched the first one with Rick Fox. I didn't watch this last one.
Yeah, I watched the last one. I didn't watch the first one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was just going to
ask. So between the two of us, we've got it covered. So.
I watched both of them. I watched both of them. And I just find it interesting, just like as far as the show and the backstory of what we were talking about when it started, like Rick Fox is like the only person who's from the Lakers who's involved, like, with this and that little clip thing that they do. Like, I don't know. I don't get a lot out of it. So I'm like, you know what? I don't know. I was just wondering what you guys thought of it.
I mean, I watched it because I was, like I said, the edible took over. I just let it play, watch the credits, and let it come on. But
B was struggling in slow motion to get to the remote to change the channel, but she never made
it. Whatever. Let's just watch it. But, I mean, if you're going to do something like that, I need to learn something that I've never, that I don't know. Teach me something. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was great to see that Rick Fox has something to do with it, but I mean, okay.
I mean, HBO's gotten to the point where it's pretty much standard for them to have a podcast about the show they do and this little after the show featurette.
Yeah.
The first one that I saw was really awkward and very disjointed, and they had the writer on Zoom. So he was on a screen, and then they had Quincy and Adam McKay and Rick Fox, and then there was that really weird trivia game they played at the end.
Yeah, so that's why I was really – okay, so that's why I wanted to see if you guys had seen the shot clock trivia game
that they play. Ridiculous.
Yeah, that was really the question I was trying to get to, because I was like, I don't know if anybody else saw this. It's so weird and, like, unnecessary. It's like – it's just – terrible. They play this game where it's like, I asked both of you guys, like, name as many Lakers head coaches as you can in 24 seconds. Mm-hmm. And then you both talk at the same time.
Right. I'm like, who's keeping score?
As a professional trivia man myself, I was disgusted at the presentation. And I can say comfortably that trivia is very hard to translate out of a live experience. It's very hard to do on a podcast. It's very hard to do on video. And this post-show featurette was just another reason why.
Yeah.
And as far as, like, it just doesn't seem necessary, Jason. I don't think the whole thing, they need to find out a way to do it better than the way they're doing it now.
No, seriously.
The Euphoria one was pretty good. I actually thought the Euphoria one provided some good insight sometimes.
Yeah, I liked even where they were sitting, the set in the background, how they cut to the images. It was nice. It was cute, you know. But, this is very, like, some haphazard, random thing. But, yeah.
Shout out to Rick Fox for getting the bag, though, you know. Keep getting them checks, big fella.
Exactly. So, episode 3, what are we expecting, guys?
Release the Riley.
Yeah.
Give it to me now. I heard the writer Max Bornstein talking about how Adrian Brody was chomping at the bit to have that big reveal when he comes out in the Armani suit with the slick back hair, and we're gonna get a couple episodes of Shaggy Pat before that's a reality. So bring it on. I can't wait. Let's get to training camp. Let's get the uniforms on.
I'm ready to see some basketball. Episode 3, please.
No disrespect to Brian, right, B? Brian hooped his heart out there, but
yeah.
Brian didn't have nothing for Magic. Why is he?
It ended in tears. Poor Brian.
Man. The look on Brian's face when Magic pulled up to the court was a classic moment right there.
Priceless. Oh, man. Magic, Mr. Studio Girl. Come on, bro. That was just terrible. And it was like, he just got emasculated, and then he had to, like, go over to his girl, like, why did you just sit there and just let him do that to me. I'm out of here.
And that's going to do it for Showtime, the podcast about the television show Winning Time, which is based on the book Showtime, coming out Sunday nights on HBO, not Showtime. For Jason Madison, Bethany Anderson, I'm Anthony Mays, and we'll see you next week.
Also, music by our very own Jason Madison.
Yeah.
Is this song called Showtime?
It is. You should have said that. It's called It's Showtime.
Yeah. Oh, there it is.